Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Sioux Falls Business Journal just posted an in-depth article analyzing the current political climate and how it might impact the state's ethanol industry. It was written by Argus Leader journalist Patrick Anderson, and he joins us now with more. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Lori.
All right, let's dig into ethanol, because ArgusLeader.com is where you can find this, or in the Business Journal. And I'm wondering, Patrick, when you sort of started looking at this and thinking it was a topic worth exploring.
Well, I think there was just a general awareness that it was a new ballgame with the administration coming in Washington, D.C., and the president. And we at the Argus, much like others in South Dakota, are well aware of the value of corn to the state's economy. I've reported on stories about that before. And so we were having conversations about, you know, what this means. And I mean, we sort of, you know, realized that there was little said by the president before when he was running his campaign about ethanol, except for his stops in Iowa. Early on, and we just wanted to look at, okay, what does the future look like for ethanol?
Let's talk about what's at stake. Put ethanol in perspective for the state economy.
Right. I mean, it's a huge driving force. I think if you talk to, so I had a chance to talk to ethanol producers, corn growers. If you look at the state's GDP and Sioux Falls' GDP, where I am, and that's a really huge indicator of the role that corn plays. As goes the price of corn, so goes the state's economy. The years where it rises, we see increases in the GDP. The years where it falls, we see a softening of the GDP. And ethanol is a huge, huge chunk of that. We're talking about almost half, I think. Well, maybe not almost half, but pretty close to it. There was 850 million bushels of corn harvested last year, and about 369 million of those bushels were for ethanol. So it's a huge impact locally.
Do you have a notion of how, the history of this and how long ethanol has been that significant to the state's economy?
So I had the opportunity. I got a little history lesson as I was working on the story from ethanol producers.
Yeah.
If we're looking at the ethanol industry, so I'm not sure about the I'm not sure if this is true or not, but you know, some old corn growers will tell you, like, Ford drove the first Model T's off the factory lot on ethanol. So it's been around for a while, but the industry really got going in the 1980s.
Okay.
Then came to prominence through actually federal policymaking, like the Clean Air Act of the 90s, and then what they call the renewable fuel standards of the 2000s. That sort of has drastically increased the usage of corn.
Okay.
Because of minimums set by the federal government when it comes to using ethanol.
So deeply entrenched, but yet also some, fairly recent changes, so maybe not as established, to not be tinkered with a little bit, I guess, is what I'm thinking. What do we know so far about the President Trump's administration? What could we tell from his campaign? You mentioned Iowa. Was he asked a lot of questions about corn or ethanol?
No. And I mean, if you look outside of Iowa, it is really hard to find any public comments about ethanol at all. He's never tweeted about ethanol. He loves Twitter, the president has maybe tweeted about oil 150 times, never about ethanol. He did campaign in Iowa, and there was a clash with Ted Cruz at some point. He used ethanol as a way to sort of compete with his primary opponent. So he did say some things at an Iowa-based renewable fuels conference about upholding the renewable fuel standard, which again is that federal policy that really is the target of a lot of lobbying from both ethanol and oil groups. And it's hard to sort of put a finger on where he stands, except to say that he is supportive generally. However, if we're looking at, if we're looking at the people he's appointed, it sort of speaks to a different bias, maybe slightly. He seems to be a little bit more familiar with people in the oil industry. There's a couple people in my story at ArgusLeader.com that I sort of highlighted. One is Scott Pruitt. He is the head of the EPA. And he was before that the Attorney General in Oklahoma and has a well-documented relationship with oil and petroleum. Another guy who makes ethanol producers nervous is Carl Icahn. He is a billionaire investor who happens to own majority stock in a refinery in Texas, and he is also a special advisor to the president. When we're talking about things that has happened out of this new administration, there was waves made, I think in February, when Icahn was saying there was maybe a deal to shift what they call the point of obligation to smaller ethanol producers and even gas stations, retail outlets. So the point of obligation, I kind of explained that since we're getting a little jargony. That basically means the renewable fuel standards set a minimum of 15 billion gallons, I think, of ethanol to be used each year.
Okay.
The point of obligation puts the burden of tracking all of that to making sure we're hitting that quota on oil refineries. So oil refineries are responsible for that whole process. It's expensive. It creates sort of a market for these standards in the, I don't know how it works exactly, but there is it's an expensive process. And Carl Icahn came in right away and he said, let's shift this to some of the smaller groups away from refineries so we don't have to worry about meeting these regulations.
Sure.
That made the ethanol industry pretty nervous right away. The White House since came out and said, we're not going to do that. And the president wrote a letter to a renewable fuels group saying we're not going to do that. So that has since calmed down. But right away, you see sort of a ripple of tension between ethanol and oil.
How about clarity? Is there a sense that there is a clear policy here? Or is it the sense that the next 4 years could, require a lot of, devoted attention to the topic?
Are you talking about clear air policy or specifics from the White House?
Yeah, specifics from the White House, specifics, policy direction. Right. What are the corn producers thinking? Are they thinking, okay, this is a rocky start, it's the first 100 days, or are they thinking, we're going to have to continue to be advocates and really keep our eye on the ball here?
Yeah, it's not clear. The future is not clear. The future is unpredictable. John Schaff, a professor at Northern State University, brought up a good point with me that's in the story. And his point was that the White House can only do so much when it comes to the renewable fuel standard. That, again, is the federal policy that everybody's talking about. It's a Congress approved measure, and the president has some power, but he can't reshape federal policy on his own. So there's that, but there is a lack of specifics from his office when we're talking about how the president views the RFS, what his plans are for it in the future, whether or not he might lower the RVO, which is the 15 billion gallons.
Right.
If
you're just tuning in, my guest is journalist Patrick Anderson with the Argus Leader in Sioux Falls. And we're talking here about the Sioux Falls Business Journal article. You can find it online at their website, ArgusLeader.com. It should be right in that front page. If not, just search the keyword ethanol. And several pieces will come up for you to peruse. And Patrick, I'm wondering about the U.S. Or the South Dakota congressional delegation and what kind of conversations people are having with our representatives in Washington and what kind of feedback corn growers are getting.
Right. So when the president's advisor, Carl Icahn, sort of spurred some concerns from ethanol right away, I think Senator John Thune was joined a bipartisan group of senators that sent the White House a letter. You know, it was just sort of a cautionary step, I think. You know, but they the state's congressional delegation is very supportive of ethanol, very skeptical of moving the point of obligation to smaller groups away from oil refineries. You know, so they like the status quo. They don't want to see the RFS change.
Right. The impact of moving that point of obligation to smaller entities, what's the potential of that? What are people worried about?
So I guess Senator John Thune was saying to me that it would disrupt the industry.
Okay.
If you read position papers from ethanol groups, they would say that it creates a more, I guess, a diverse burden because you have more groups like retailers and producers keeping track of meeting those quotas. Right now, if you have the current status quo of making the refineries meet those quotas, there's fewer people that are filing those, you know, that paperwork and that kind of stuff, I guess.
Are we looking at maintaining the status quo as sort of the pinnacle here, or are folks starting to say, you know, we could make this better, we could make this more beneficial for South Dakota with some particular policies? Are there
right.
talk about that, or is it just hold the line?
Well, no, they're actually, ethanol producers are very interested in waivers for E15. Right now, some parts of the country can not outlaw E15, but outlaw it as a conventional pump option, required to be a flex, what they call flex fuel option for specific vehicles designed for that. They are seeking a waiver from those parts of the country that would allow E15 to be sold at the pump year-round. What happens in some parts of the country is you know, gas stations will switch out pumps, actually, because during the summer months, E15 has to be flex fuel, and during the winter months, it can be sold conventionally.
Right.
And so there's some red tape that the ethanol industry would like to cut through. So that is one of the things they're looking at.
Interesting stuff, and some of it I had really not thought of before. So a great article from Patrick Anderson, some long-form journalism there on ArgusLeader.com or the Sioux Falls Business Journal. Patrick Anderson, thank you so much for being a guest. Come back.
Hey, thank you so much, Lori. I had a great time.